On today's episode of New Tech People, I interview Alex Sherard, CTO and co-founder at local tech startup Lift & Go. We discuss Alex's story with Lift & Go, building their team locally in Newcastle, as well as his personal journey to where he's at today. Hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to episode 8 of New Tech People. Today we have Alex Sherard. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you. Hi. How are you?
Mate, I am very good. Did I get the pronunciation right?
That was just perfect.
Yeah, good. Good to hear. Mate, you're obviously working at Lift & Go right now. You're the CTO there and co-founder. Mate, give us a bit of an overview for people that don't know you. Who are you? What brought you to your current role?
All right. So as an individual, I'm a French-Australian person that just moved there 6 years ago. And I have now maybe 10 years of experience, a little more, with 5 in corporate and 5 in startups as an employee and as a co-founder. Okay. And I moved to Newey just a year ago to focus exclusively on Lift & Go.
Nice.
That's the mission for me right now.
Cool. What brought you to Australia?
Well, the lifestyle, I suppose,
yeah.
And also the intention to get a better English, yeah. So becoming fluent, that was always a dream for me back at university.
Yeah.
So actually I was looking with a friend at coming here as a working holiday visa,
yeah.
And it didn't happen. But later on, when I met my wife working for a company,
yeah.
We got the chance to actually move here as consultant for News Corp.
Yeah, right.
That's the story.
That's nice. It's nice to be able to have a company bring you out.
Yeah, that was just, they basically did all the hard work.
Yeah.
And we have to build on top of that, so perfect. That was comfortable.
And then that was into Sydney, and then you spent 5 years in Sydney before
right.
coming to Newcastle.
Yes, 5 years going from the city to, what was that? Altimo and then Maroubra.
Yeah.
I did a few suburb there.
Yeah, nice.
And a few jobs as well. So okay. I left News Corp after the mission and I went into startups, something I've always wanted to do.
Cool. Let's go into that, mate. Startups, you've obviously done corporate life before and now moved into startups. You've been involved with a few now. Mate, what interests you or what excited you to get into the startup scene?
The startup for me is a very important steps to actually fully understand what it is to go from a couple of people to an actual like hundreds, or I don't know how far we will go, but as far as we can. That was important in terms of company growth, but also in terms of product, focusing from the raw needs, getting some specification out of people that would not really know how to deal with that, and then actually build a solution around that and coding something from scratch. That was the dream.
The dream?
Yes.
Cool. Because you're obviously a hands-on guy yourself to start with. You can obviously build yourself, but I guess that's the first challenge, I guess, is to be technical yourself. But then you just mentioned the next big challenge, which is building a team.
Yes, that's probably even harder, yeah. Than working even from on a product that has nothing yet. Building a team is challenging just because of the human element, very hard to predict, and actually I'm not even trying to.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to make sure that everyone has short and I would say medium goals we can mutually meet,
yeah.
So for the company and the individual.
Yeah, that's cool. Now let's keep on. I love the whole people side of it, right? Obviously, what I do for a job day to day, it's dealing with people and trying to help build teams. In a startup environment, it's no different, right? You're facing the same challenges, finding yes. those right people for the right roles. I guess that comes with a whole complexity of other challenges as well. But you're gone from a team of two, you and Kev as a co-founder.
That's it. And Tristan, and very Tristan. Early on as well.
Yeah. So how did you guys meet to start with?
All right, so it started with Kevin and I in probably October 2015.
Yeah.
We met through a common friend.
Yeah.
And we actually didn't know each other we get to know me because I had already done another startup called Backseat in 2014, but actually failed because of the lack of funding. And out of that, I had, built some experience around this mobility space.
Yeah.
But I had the feeling unfulfilled, and I had unfinished business with that. So when Kevin approached me, he was ending the NOMA program called Slingshot.
Yeah.
I mean, it was actually the Slingshot program with NOMA. And we had a problem to solve, and I had a will to help him building a solution, an MVP.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's how it started. Yeah.
Nice.
The thing that really pleased me with Kevin is he came with a way to build a sustainable business. By sustainable, I mean that financially he will make it work by charging the organizations.
Yeah.
Instead of being a consumer concerned in terms of the finance.
Yeah.
I don't really know if that makes sense, but anyway.
No, I know what you mean. It's obviously a lot easier from a startup perspective. I guess one of the biggest challenges is always the money, right? Money in, money out. And if you're charging clients from the start, it makes it at least a little bit easier on that path to growth and a little bit of sustainability.
That's right. And it was also for me something else we can worry about. We would not have to worry about. We could focus on basically product and sales. And who knows then where it will lead.
Yeah.
But for the time being, for the early stage, you really want to be focused. And that's why Kevin's strategy really was compelling to me.
Yeah. Well, that's the biggest thing. Okay, let's keep going down that path. I love that. Compelling, right? So I work with a number of companies, right? And I guess the whole recruitment game is changing from the perspective of companies used to have all the power. And they could put a job ad up and they get a lot of applicants, right? The game's changed, especially in tech world, where companies have to put a compelling message together of why you should come join them. A guy like yourself is going to have multiple options, right? Like if, let's say, whole Lift and Go went down the pipe tomorrow for whatever reason, you're going to have multiple opportunities with what you'd want to do, right? You could have multiple offers in a day.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think so, mate. So when you're talking about, you know, creating a compelling message, Kevin obviously did that really well in getting you on board.
That's right.
How do you guys go about that in building your team?
I would, I think it would be best I can narrow this question to the engineering and the product team.
Yeah.
For me, I really play the card of being a startup.
Yeah.
Being in a, at a stage that will grow, because that's the only way we can go. There is no other way but growing. And it's really compelling for people to know that basically they will be there at an early stage, and therefore they will share the rewards. And this reward could take many shapes. It's not only financial, it could be also in terms of career.
Yeah.
So for example, we got some senior engineers that are looking at moving into more managerial positions. And that's exactly what a startup can really provide. Not only because it's convenient, it's because it's necessary. You want to promote the people that are internal first, because they know well the product, they know well the problems we try to solve, and they can communicate that to the new employees.
Perfect. Yeah, I think that's is obviously an element. It's hard to compete on a pure financial perspective, right, to start with. So it's really that vision about, hey, where could this role go, the possibilities with that. And also there's some other things you and I have talked before about, you know, flexibility, and you've got 10 people in your team, and very rarely they're all in at the same time, they're working flexible hours and things like that. So there's obviously a high level of trust there.
Yes, you're completely right. We can't really compete on the on the financial gain.
Yeah.
So
not in the short term anyway.
At the moment things may change in the future. Now, right now, it's all about showing some trust, because after all, it's probably one of our core value, being in the shared mobility space. Trust is very, very important. And what we do at a team level is trusting our people that they will deliver the work they told us they would do. And we don't really mind if they do that from home or if they do that at night. We have some people that come early and leave early, and then actually they finish whatever they have to later in the evening. And we have other people that are more comfortable doing, the normal days, probably short breaks, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Me being French still. I do value the time we spend eating.
Yeah.
So the lunch break are quite important in terms of sharing the time together, even if it's dragging on.
Yeah.
Like it's not 20 minutes break, it's more going to be 60 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's worth it.
Yeah.
It's really where you can connect beyond the need. You can actually go where it's where people can share some personal stuff.
Yeah.
That's important. Oh, not only personal, but some anything really.
Yeah. So you do a 60-minute lunch break most days?
Yeah, most of the day. Yeah, I think it's not just about eating.
No.
It's about talking and also having a ping pong game just to chill.
Yeah.
And relieve some of the pressure that, as any startup, we go through.
Yeah.
And what causes? I mean, the cause of that though is obviously that we spend probably a little more time during the evenings,
yeah.
Or we come a little earlier in the morning. Look, this is my business, and I do care about the time I spend over the weekend. But I'm not hesitating I'm not hesitating any minutes to spend an extra without asking anything in return. It's just, I don't know. It's just something that seems natural.
Yeah, yeah, cool. I think you'd be one of a very, very few people, especially in a startup scene, that would actually say, hey, I am making lunch and time with other people over food a massive priority. So that's a good, refreshing perspective, I guess.
I'm glad to hear that.
No, it's nice. That's cool. So continuing down this, building the team. You've obviously been involved. You've worked corporate side in Sydney and then a couple of startups in Sydney, and now you're building a team up here. What's your perspective on building a team in Newcastle as opposed to Sydney?
That's a great question. I had some fear when I moved here that it would be harder, just because it seemed like there would be more offer, like in terms of human resources.
Yeah.
But it's actually the opposite. And I suppose it might not be true for every businesses, but in Newcastle, as a startup, we are still only a few compared to Sydney. I don't know what would be the exact numbers, but it's probably a 10% kind of a ratio, or probably less.
Nice.
Yes. And therefore, it's actually convenient to us because we have less startups to compete with. We are not competing with likes of, I don't know, big companies, hundreds of employees. So if we were in Sydney, actually before that, I was trying to assemble a team in Sydney in 2 years ago, and it was really a struggle because not only you could not keep up with the finance of big companies, but also well-funded startups.
Yeah.
You end up having to be more innovative, and even if it sounds cool to be innovative, it's actually cumbersome.
Yeah.
So I have no doubt saying that I would prefer build a team here in Newcastle.
That's
rather
cool.
Than Sydney. Again, something I probably need to add to that, it's the fact that the university is a very good pool of, bring together a lot of talent, and actually there is a lot of good initiative coming from them.
Yeah.
So without the university, that would have been probably another story. But thanks to that, they are providing the glue for different businesses to come together.
Yeah.
Startups.
So have you recruited graduates from the university?
We did.
Yeah.
We have one of our, I thought he would be junior, but actually he was very talented, more like a mid-level developer from them, because he was actually mixing university and experience on the field. So that's one thing. And then we have also our senior that came out of a university, but obviously a few years ago.
Yeah, cool. Mate, you've opened the door for education, right?
You did.
You've done a bachelor's degree.
That's right.
And a master's.
Yes.
Yeah. Whilst also being an instructor at General Assembly. So you've seen both sides of it, right? I think there's the rise of the General Assemblies of the world, where you're mixing obviously education with experience. You just mentioned before, some of your best hires have got that education plus experience. And what's your thoughts on best path for an up and coming developer or engineer, let's say, coming up to be ready for the workforce?
I think that a diploma is something really good, yep. Really, really good, but it's not enough. And also it's not a necessity to have to successfully build a career in software engineering. That being said, I would say that university provides a lot of knowledge, a lot of actually it's more like a way of thinking that is something you can't really skip just doing a few weeks training.
Mm-hmm.
So they are not really competing, these two things. Like in our team, we have someone that came out of General Assembly. He did the 3 months program. I think any kind of a 3 months program like that could be convenient. But we also need some people more senior that probably have more theoretical knowledge.
Yeah.
That only, a university can provide. Actually, it's not just university. I think the key element is time.
Yeah.
There is no shortcut. Whether you go through General Assembly or the university, you will have to build your experience. And what the university sort of tried to do, and probably even better nowadays, is to provide on-the-field experience,
yeah.
Not just academical kind of knowledge. And General Assembly, obviously, it's, and the likes, is focusing on that. So I think the key element is experience, time, and some general interest in the theory of computer science.
And you obviously, you played the role as an instructor at General Assembly. How did you find out?
That was great. That was complementary to what I was doing in Cine.
Yeah.
So I studied that when I got into startups.
Yeah.
And for me, not only it was a way to actually share my knowledge, the knowledge I had acquired, and it was also a way to help financially with like the expenses.
Yeah.
And also something that is actually the key outcome is the networking, because you get to see some people from different areas, different background, and it's something I've never done before, not at that scale, because when you face a class of 16, sometimes more students, you have to take into consideration where they come from to adapt for teaching to them.
Yeah,
it's really important, especially when you use a metaphorical teaching,
yeah.
Just to help speed up the knowledge, basically.
Yeah,
that's very key.
Yeah, nice. Mate, if we take it all the way back, mate, what got you into, you know, technology? What got you into the development space in general? Like how did this come about for you?
I think the more we go back in time, the more approximate the answer will be, but I will try my best. I always had a genuine interest into science.
Yeah.
Just because it was a way for me to explain what was going on around me. And also I always hated doing more than two or three times the same thing. So I wanted to automate things,
yeah.
As much as I can, or at least doing one travel instead of three,
yeah.
You know, to clean the dishes or whatever.
Yeah.
So effectively I was attracted by mathematical yeah. University first.
Oh.
So I studied math for a couple of years, and then I moved into computer science just because I didn't see what would lead me, the math, just the pure math aspect of that. And into computer science, I could actually satisfy this need of automating a lot of things. So a lot of the tasks we do out there, and we feel like we are efficient because we use an Excel spreadsheet, it's actually probably just 10% of what is possible to do nowadays.
Yeah, and us. Hey, you're not the first person I've interviewed that says, you know, there's a want or a desire to sort of start to automate something and not repeat a task over and over, and that being a driving influence in getting into technology and building things. I think you're definitely not alone there.
Look, I think it's actually a trait that will share that a lot of computer science people will share, because they will probably not express that this way. They might say, well, some would say it's just by I'm lazy and I don't want to do twice the same thing. I want to basically concentrate on innovation or creation rather than chores.
Yeah.
And that's probably a nice way to put it as well.
Yeah, that's, yeah, you're making that whole, you know, what can you make more efficient that you can take off your plate, that you can actually make more time to focus on the stuff you want to do, right?
Yes.
Life's pretty good when you get to do that.
I reckon. And I don't want to scare anyone, but I think AI, even though I don't believe really it's intelligence as we have, human beings, I think it will actually automate even more things.
Yeah.
So the core things that I'm sure no machine can compete with human, it's creativity.
Yeah.
That's something that is not yet understood how it happens.
Yeah.
And I do think that basically by automating all the chores, we can concentrate on what human are still unique for.
I completely agree. I also think that's the differentiator between the more junior level technology professionals and more senior people, is those more junior tasks are the ones that will be automated over time, right? And the people that will really succeed in time will be the people that can actually use their brain to actually think, hey, how is this piece of code I'm writing affecting the business? And not just writing it for the sake of writing it or writing really clean code, but actually how is this going to affect, you know, my end customer, and being able to sort of link the technology and the end outcome. I think that's the differentiator, right?
I share completely your view.
Yeah.
It's going beyond this additional functionality I need to build. It's asking the why, I suppose.
It's no different for me, right? In the recruitment industry, there's there's a lot of talk about recruitment industry being, you know, disrupted or technology overtaking it, with a lot of skill matching, and a lot of those tools are already out there. They've been out there for quite a while, but there's a human element to it.
Yes.
I think I welcome it. The more technology that comes and takes the crappy parts of my role away, the better. If I can reduce admin and have artificial intelligence helping, you know, take the repeatable tasks out of my day and just leave the consulting aspect and the actual people aspect to it, hey, life's good as far as I'm concerned.
I'm following you completely.
Yeah.
It's the same way of thinking.
Yeah, mate, I think it's it'll be interesting to see how it evolves, right? And
yes.
I think that is the key for other people, is to really try to understand, hey, what value am I bringing? And if you are doing a completely repeatable task day in, day out, you know, what else can you be doing? How is that going to evolve? Because there will be elements of a lot of those roles that are taken over, right?
You're completely right. Eventually it will happen. Although I do think that the roles will... it's like software. We thought, I think, 40 years ago it would kill a lot of jobs, but it has actually just changed.
Yeah, just it creates new ones, right?
Yes.
In the same way, it just changes the role. As there's some of those skills that are no longer needed, and you've got to continue to evolve, right, as a person. But
yes, I
agree. Let's go down that route a little, that continual evolution. You obviously have learned a lot of skills over your time, and would have had to change from a technical professional to probably, as you've gone up, you're a CTO, you're building teams, completely different skill set, right? But what do you do from a learning perspective? What do you do? Do you read books? Do you listen to podcasts?
I'm into reading,
yeah.
Not books, but articles.
Yeah.
On Medium or anything online. I don't really mind the websites.
Is there an author or two that you would recommend to other people on Medium?
Not specifically, actually. I'm actually using Twitter as a way to source the content I'm keen to read, but I can't really give you a name that would stand out. I think I would recommend any tech person to follow some big companies such as Atlassian, Google, and Microsoft. Any big company, they usually have engineering blog.
Yeah.
And not only they share some programming tips and tricks, but also they share some managerial content,
yeah,
and processes, how they work. They are actually quite open about what they are doing.
Yeah.
Airbnb is amazing for that as well.
Yeah.
Not actually the service, I'm talking about, again, the engineering team.
Yeah.
So if you're into web technologies, they are at the forefront with Facebook. Google is amazing for, well, everything really. But they have some excellent tools in the map. So everything that is geolocation based.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what I do. I mean, Twitter is a great way to quickly go from a couple of people that are valuable to hundreds.
Yeah.
It's actually hard to
narrow that down.
Yeah, narrow
right?
it down. Exactly.
That is a problem with Twitter, right? Is the noise. I'm definitely not alone in sharing that opinion. I think I've heard and read that enough times. And it is a problem with Twitter, right?
It is.
Mate, you just made mention. I think it's really. I don't know, it's really interesting that the big companies, they're so freely, they share so freely all their information. It's just like, it's phenomenal what we now have access to, where you can actually understand and get insights into the biggest companies in the world, how they're actually doing what they're doing, right? And they're freely open with sharing that information.
It's surprising. I don't really know what would be the reason behind that, but I suppose one of them is... it's actually to attract open-minded people.
Yeah.
Because they will know that eventually information cannot really be retained,
yeah,
or not forever. So they are better off taking the lead,
yeah,
and asking even their employees to share some of that. Not only it will fulfill them to share with their loved ones and friends and actually build their own career. Actually, I was reading an article about the way the CEO of Google, what his name, he's managing his teams, and his key mission is not really to grow himself, it's to actually make sure that everyone around him can grow and feel that it's not only making a life at Google, it's just making a life in general. So for me, the key lesson is to understand that if the people around you feel comfortable and they are just glad to be with you, then it will probably suffice to keep them around, to keep them learning their own stuff.
Yeah.
And also it will hopefully generate a good networking effect.
Yeah, well, I think people will be more productive at work if they're happy, right? If they're happy in their life in general.
That's right.
They're going to be better at work and they're better to be around. I think differentiate what you mentioned of before, with companies sharing their information, right? I don't think information is a differentiator this day and age, right? I think everyone's got all the information. You know, with a little bit of research,
yes,
you can normally find out how to do nearly anything, right? The differentiator is actually going ahead and doing it, right? As in the technology you're building is obviously new, but there could be a team out there that could execute on and doing the same thing and very,
yes,
similar technology, right? You could get a really solid team of engineers and to build something similar, but the differentiator is actually doing that and then finding the market, actually marketing to that market, getting customers. So there's so much more than the information at hand, right? That is the differentiator in success. So I think what you said, there's really two elements. A, information's not the big power, right? It's actually executing on that. But then B, using that to as a candidate attraction thing. So if they're putting out really good information and you're looking at Atlassian day in, day out, and they're saying, you know, all this really cool information, you're like, oh, if I wasn't running my own show, I'd probably want to go work at Atlassian, right? So based on that information.
Yeah, I agree, it's very attractive,
yeah,
for people to go with a team that shares their knowledge and they don't just keep it internally.
Yeah.
So... yeah, no, for me, it does make a difference as an engineer.
Yeah.
So actually at Liftengo, I just started to get the engineers, we just had a Jira board that is about publishing articles.
Yeah.
So I will be one of the author, but I want very much to have everyone from the most skilled to the most junior person to get involved with that.
Nice.
It's important.
Yeah, very nice. So what else do you do from a learning perspective? You do a lot of reading. Do you listen to any podcasts?
I do listen to a few, but I do fail at working and listening at the same time.
Yeah.
When I'm listening, I need to stop writing or doing anything that is not in relation with the podcast itself. So eventually I end up listening to podcasts in my commute.
Yeah.
Which is now very short or busy with some carpoolers.
Yeah.
So again, I've started to look at the Smart City podcast.
Yeah.
From Zoe Effer, I think. That's it. Again, for me, the best thing is reading.
Yeah.
Because it's something I can do whenever. You can be just, even if you have just 5 minutes,
yeah,
you can read. While a podcast, listening to a podcast, it requires like some commitment. If a podcast lasts 20 minutes,
yeah,
it's hard to stop and put it back. But I did started to watch the your podcast maybe a month ago.
Yeah.
And I find that very good, actually, to put a face on the names of people.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're trying to do, obviously, build this local tech community. There's a lot of knowledge out there. Hopefully, there's some people out there who have an interest in and around the startup scene that might be able to get some, you know, some knowledge around you, right, on what you're doing. There'd be very few startups in Newcastle that are as advanced as your team. So there's probably some key learnings that you've been through and key mistakes that you've made that people, you know, you might be able to help people avoid.
Maybe. Depends on the questions. I'm sure we have some knowledge around funding, around finding clients.
Yeah.
And also just as like keeping the team together.
Yeah.
That's not that easy.
No, it's not.
I would never assume that people will stick around if we do nothing.
Yeah.
So we need to be proactive and just make sure that we ask whether things are going well or if anyone needs something.
Yeah, I completely agree. The recruitment job's not done once they come on board, right?
It's really, really hard. It's I think it's not a job of every day, but you need to think about it. I mean, in your position, it's quite different, but in mine, it's something that I just add a reminder every maybe 3 weeks.
Yeah.
To make sure that I walk around and have I talked to this guy more than 5 minutes in the past 3 weeks?
Yeah.
So obviously, as a small team, it's fairly easy.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good practice for the future as well.
Yeah. It's sort of doing the unscalable, right? It's just, hey, it's not scalable to go around and talk to every single person individually as that team grows. But hey, in the short term, you've got to be doing that sort of thing, right? Like, to, as you said, challenge, one of the biggest challenges in the startup environment. You know, we talked about fundraising, obviously, that's a challenge. But building that team and keeping that team together is massive.
Well, you raise the funding to actually get a team
and
get clients. So it would be all a waste if you just hire people and then you just assume they will do their work and be happy about it.
Yeah.
That would be almost, candid to think that.
Yeah. You just made mention of, you know, setting reminders and things like that. From a productivity perspective, what do you do? What do you use any tools on a daily basis that would, you know, to help you be efficient in what you do?
I do. So I'm using Jira heavily for the engineering side, but we are also expanding that to the support.
Yeah.
And I use a lot my calendar just because I've realized that my memory is reaching limits and also I don't trust myself. So I just put everything in my calendar nowadays. It's it's gonna be my key tool to drive what I have to do.
So me, say using your calendar, right? You do that for just appointments, or do you put like things to do in your calendar as well?
Well, yeah, things to do. I do that for everything really, like from the sprint meetings, retro, backlog, and releases. But also client meeting, networking, events. Sometimes I don't know, like buy more grocery.
Yeah.
Anything. That goes in the calendar. Yes. Yeah. Well, not every time, but whenever I'm missing a specific item that I don't really want, I can't miss.
Yeah.
like you know, nappies. That will probably end up in my calendar.
Yeah, mate, you don't want to get home without the nappies.
Yes, you don't want to do that.
Mate, what's family life look like for you then?
It's made of a lot of compromise. So my wife and I are sharing the chores, and also I value in extremely the time I spend with my sons, my two kids.
How old?
They are 5 and 3.
Yeah.
Just a little more than that. And they are at this age where they need this interaction. But my point is basically they need to go outside, they need to run.
Yeah.
Otherwise they will exhaust you at home. So time management is a key thing in my life right now.
Yeah.
Especially because my wife is working full time as well.
Yeah.
So everything that is from doing the grocery, clean laundry, and picking up the kids, it's shared.
Yeah.
Like there is no one is doing the other. I mean, for a while it was all on her, not all but a lot.
Yeah.
And a few years back I decided to change that just because I would be missing my life. Like startup is fantastic,
yeah.
Lift and Go is great, but it is a mean to an end.
Yeah, I think that's a good approach, right? I think very, very easily it can become all encompassing, and then you look back after a year or two and you're like, oh,
I miss so many things.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yes.
Do you do anything to help prioritize that time at home? Do you like, once you're saying, you may mention the calendar before, but do you do anything to help, you know, put some time away and just say this is family time type thing?
I would mostly try to get a fair and consistent schedule.
Yeah.
So I don't really need a tool more than what I already have right now. I must be honest, I've completely put the friends aside.
Yeah.
Not completely, still socialize, but basically it's work and family right now.
Yeah.
And for a few occasion, friends, but it comes third.
Yeah.
In my life. So I don't really need to get another tool right now for that. It may change when the kids are maybe 2 years from now. I don't know.
That's interesting. Obviously you're juggling a lot of things, like a lot of people, and I think the startup world obviously influences that very heavily. But it sounds like you've found a good mix there, which is it's good. Not everyone can do it. I think everyone faces that same challenge, right? And whether you're a startup or not,
yes,
you've got the challenges of work and work and life and technology and putting that phone away and things like that. Very difficult.
It is a challenge. Yes.
Mate, it's a constant challenge. I'm terrible with that. It's something I'm definitely trying to work on. Anything else, I guess, anything else from a productivity perspective or a tools perspective, anything that you think that you could offer people from becoming a more efficient engineer or developer or leader of people? Is there anything else from a tools perspective or some learnings that you could provide people that you'd say, hey, this really changed my life, or this really, made my working life easier, more efficient?
I believe I have a bit of a story to tell.
Cool.
So I've always been procrastinating. I don't know.
Procrastinating?
That's the word. Thanks. Because I wanted to do a perfect product or perfect something.
Yeah.
And I decided to actually move away from that to just build something good. And perfection would probably come incrementally. And what I'm leading you to is just that when we started Lift and Go, it was all about building a product that will work with a few functionalities. And then we had to hire people around that to help me and building this solution. And now actually I reached probably the third stage in my transformation, that is setting up more processes. But I didn't need to do that 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Now is the time where basically I spent two months or some of my time, a lot of my time, rethinking the way we were deciding what would be a priority, and also setting up some clear processes around who is responsible for what. And that's something that for me is a turn point in my career, because I used to be, especially in the startup world, like head-on, just completely into the product, the code, and releasing things as fast as we can. Now I'm more into the planning and making sure that things are clear for everyone. So do I need a tool to assist me with that? Well, I would say it's more a principle. Like, I just need something like a pencil or any workflow drawing tool where you can actually define the different stage of things. So it applies to releasing a new version of a product, but it's also applying to how to define a story, a user story, so a new feature.
Yeah.
It goes first within the hands of probably the clients, then the business analysis, then the product manager. And sometimes it's going to be the same person involved, actually very much all the time in the startup world.
Yeah.
But the more we hire, the more we have to define some clear segmentation between, well, department is a big word, but more like individual.
Yeah.
So for me, it's all about processes right now.
Yeah.
Maybe I went a bit away from your question.
No, no. Well, I think that's just as valuable, right? As you, not everything's always about tools. Sometimes it's just about the thought process. And, you know, obviously making planning up front a bigger focus is something a lot of people could take some value from, and then also done's better than perfect, right? You know, get it done, get it out there, and then continue to improve as you go. But if you wait for perfect, you'll be waiting a very long time, right?
Or you will forever wait.
Yeah,
it will never happen. Perfection is just an idea.
Yeah, cool.
But I just want to add that online I haven't been really sensitive to this part of the job.
Yeah.
So that's probably something I'd like to share, because I think that going from a very tiny startup to a small startup, there is already things happening, and now we are transitioning to something else. And this is where creating processes, or at least documenting them, because we had already processes, it's just that now we need to agree and be consistent with them. For us, it's something that we have to do it all by ourselves, because I can't find online some solution, and I reckon there will be never something that will be basically one solution fits them all.
Yeah.
So I just want to share maybe the fact that it's like growing up as a person. You enter different phases, and one of them is, unfortunately, is more around like rethinking the way the business operates and not actually doing, adding a new functionality to the client. And this is, I would have appreciated to be aware of that before facing the fact.
Yeah, yeah, so it's actually taking some time out of writing code and actually taking a step back.
Yes.
Having a look at it. What's this going to look like, planning for it, setting up the processes. Yeah.
That's and again, I want to stress that it's not something you want to do too early.
No.
And probably not too late as well, but it's hard to know when it's too late. But too early is probably a killer as well.
Yeah, well, I think early on, especially in the startup world, you just got to be getting something out the door, right? Finding out whether there is some form of product market fit out there. And then going from that perspective, as in, like, let's see if what we're actually building, people want it, rather than, you can have all the processes as well, but if what you're building, people don't want it, there's no point, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's like probably, I mean, that's exactly why we haven't bothered when we started. But now it's time. Like, once you reach, I don't know, maybe the 10 marks of people working toward the same goal, you need to find a way.
Awesome. You're building this team in Newcastle. We may mention Newcastle a couple of times. We'll just finish up in and around that space. Mate, what's your thoughts? You've been here for a year now. The startup scene's, you know, smaller than Sydney, but I think you've made mention it's on a good progress path. What's your thoughts on the Newcastle tech scene in general?
Newcastle, I think the tech scene is quite active compared to its size. So I think that is going to be driving a lot of growth.
Yeah.
The university is obviously a catalyzer to that process. And I think Liftengo is just the proof that things are happening.
Yeah.
We could have, I mean, I was based in Sydney before, so we could have moved Tristan and Kevin here, especially because we have some of our big clients over there, Qantas and a few others. But we haven't. Why? Because Newcastle has some unique qualities, such as the proximity to Sydney and also the lifestyle. And by lifestyle, I mean the Sydney kind of lifestyle, but even better because things are more affordable. You can drive around, you can park, you can raise a family, you can actually buy a property still. So I think that all of that will make sure that Newcastle, if the cards are well played from now on, it will grow and appear on the tech map, like a global, on a global scale. Actually, as a proof of that, there is this DevOps event happening in October, and
we're actually sponsoring that. The coffee.
Great. Well, I will make sure to have one on you guys. Now, I think that's one indication that things are going toward the right direction.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's guys out there that are helping to drive that. And there's enough people in the Newcastle tech scene to help, to want to see the continued growth.
Yes.
Probably, you know, and the people involved with the DevOps days are doing a phenomenal job in bringing that to Newcastle. I think it'd be no different to, you know, people like yourself, people like Justin Hales from Camplify, getting out there and, you know, sharing their information and experiences from a startup perspective. I think that just helps the local scene, help other people learn from your mistakes, help grow here. Slingshot do a phenomenal job supporting the local community, as you said, the university. So hopefully it continues to grow. There's enough people doing the right things, I think.
I share this feeling.
Yeah.
It's I could see how some of these successful people, whether it's the CEO of Campify or someone else, as long as they get involved, they will generate some momentum, and that with some good marketing, it will pull some of the talent actually out of the other places around the world. I mean, I'm coming from France. Like, I know I did a long stop in Sydney, but it shows that Newcastle is attractive and is going to appear on a map at a global scale, not just an Australian scene.
Yeah.
I think that it is an exciting time. I don't know where we're going to go in the next 10 years. I think I will still be around.
Yeah.
So, I can't wait for that.
Yeah, nice. Hey, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
My pleasure. It was a pleasure, James.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to this episode. You can find all episodes now on newitechpeople.com.au. newitechpeople.com.au. Thanks.